Their analysts had badly misinterpreted your psychological profile. They made sure you had enough NPCs in order to perform the ritual. One thing they didn't anticipate was that you might refuse to do it. That created a minor delay, which proved critical for us. You bought us the time we needed. We really appreciate that. He stood up and proffered his hand. It's been nice meeting you. Don't worry about the loan. Just keep paying it off. I hope it's not for much longer. Your body is perfectly safe in the module center. Also, as a sign of our appreciation, we've arranged for a very decent discount for you on all our services for the duration of 1 year. Your brother is still working for us, by the way. He might get promoted soon. I don't think I'll see you again, unfortunately. Have a nice day. He opened the door, about to leave. Wait a sec. I finally got my wits together. What am I supposed to do now? He turned back to me. You're a free man now. Apart from your loan, you have no obligations to Reflex Bank whatsoever. Enjoy the game. I stood by the window, admiring the sea view, and replaying our conversation in my mind. You're a free man now. You're a free man now. That was it. Mission accomplished. I was free. I could press the logout button whenever I wanted to. I could go back to my family. The sheer thought warmed me inside. But I couldn't abandon the Red Owls. That would be just as sick as sacrificing them, only in a different manner. I shouldn't make any illusions about players, either. To them, every Kaltean scalp had a price tag attached. Some of them were quite capable of slaughtering Kaltean children wholesale. Very well, Sir Olgerd, I muttered. Is it Plan B, then? The moment I walked out of the virtual office, I noticed that the camp was strangely quiet. Almost deserted, in fact. The sentries were still on the walls, but not a commander in sight. No sergeants, no captains. Actually, no adults at all. Where was Droy? Pretus? What on earth was going on? With a weak cry, a young archer on the wall came tumbling down a ladder, counting all the rungs with his spine in the process. He scrambled up off the ground and darted toward me, his eyes wide open with horror. He ran blindly, repeatedly stumbling and falling before he reached me. Gasping for air, he kept opening his mouth like a grounded fish, struggling to speak.
Keeper, they, you know, over there, it's...
Calm down, boy, I said, trying to sound composed. I was about to explode myself. Take a deep breath. Like this. Good. Now report. He obeyed my instructions, then began to explain.
All the adults are gone. They told me to say goodbye to you for them.
My back erupted in a cold sweat. Gone where?
Over there.
He pointed at the quiet camp.
They went to see the dead keeper.
I left him and dashed for the door to Brookville Halls. I just prayed I wasn't too late. What the hell were they up to? Women and children crowded around the open hatch. Some were crying.
Others stood silent, as if frozen. Some of them saw me. Hope filled their eyes. What on earth was going on here? I dove into the hatch and flew through the tunnel. I popped out of it like a champagne cork and galloped down the hall, praying they hadn't done anything stupid. Faster. Faster. The Chaldean warriors stood with their backs to me. They hadn't noticed me yet. This looked like the entire Chaldean army. Adult warriors, young men, and quite a few women, too. All of my commanders stood motionless next to the obelisk. Laosh froze with his head bowed low, listening to the keeper's ghost. "Am I interrupting something?" I yelled sarcastically. All heads turned to me. I looked into their faces. My friends, my brothers in arms. They preserved a grim silence. Some averted their stares. Others glared defiantly back. Whispers ran riot.
"Ah, here's your keeper."
Brolgerd faked a welcoming smile. "Shut up!" I snapped, striding through the parting crowd toward Droy. "What's going on here?"
"Can't you see?" Droy replied calmly. "He told us that our lives would be enough to charge the crystal."
I crossed my arms. "Aha."
"Olgerd, you need to understand,"
Laosh cut in.
"This is the only solution. The Horde is almost upon us. The united armies of Dark and Light will be here any day. We can't defeat them. What we can do is offer a voluntary sacrifice. If we feed the obelisk, it'll protect the others. Our children will live. Otherwise, we have no future. The old keeper promised us..."
I looked around me. "Let's listen to what others have to say."
"Please don't stop us,"
Pike said calmly.
"We must do this. The enemy's too strong and too numerous,"
Badwar growled.
"There's no way we can defeat them. Had it only been the Horde, no one would have contemplated this. But each human warrior, either dark or light, is worth 10 Chaldeans. Neither the Brocks nor the city walls can stop them. I'd much rather die in battle, but that's too easy. Too irresponsible toward my children."
"If we die in battle, we won't be saving anyone," Lavina added. "But if we die here, we'll provide the others with the protection they need. We'll give them life."
The ghost was beaming like a Cheshire cat. What a lunatic. "Is this what you all think?" I strained my voice, looking over the crowd.
"We do."
"Yes."
"Sure."
"And me in turn. I give you my word, the word of the city keeper, that your families will live."
The dead Master Brolgerd shrieked, his eyes glowing. "The word of the city keeper?" I snapped. "I've already believed a few. One wanted me to come here running, but as it turned out, he was a bit economical with the truth. Two more abandoned us in the deserted city, leaving us to fend for ourselves amid all the ruins and desolation. And now you. What did you offer me the moment you saw me? You wanted me to sacrifice my friends." I was ad-libbing my head off. I could only imagine the admins scratching their heads in front of their computers.
"My friends!"
I shouted, adding a note of remorse to my voice.
"This is all my fault! I led you into a trap! No wonder your ancestors nicknamed this place the Forbidden City. All I can say is that I trusted those so-called city keepers. I thought I could revive the obelisk on my own. Had I managed to do so, we'd have all been safe now."
"Don't blame yourself, my friend," Droy thundered. "Had it not been for you, many of us would have been rotting in the ground a long time ago. You were the only one who offered us the chance to survive."
The throne room echoed with cheers.
"But knowing you,"
Droy added with a cunning squint,
"you've probably already come up with something, haven't you?"
Chuckles ran through the crowd. Smiles of hope lit up some of the faces. The hope that they just might avoid the slaughter.
"You could say so,"
I replied.
"Speak up! Tell us!"
Their voices rang with newfound optimism. This felt like a deja vu. This was how they'd cheered me by the fire when I'd first suggested we went to the Ennin City. With one difference. Today, I wasn't obeying anyone's instructions. No one was offering me prompts telling me where to go. Today, I was choosing my own path.
"Okay, okay."
I raised my hands in the air to quieten them down. "I have a suggestion to make. I'm telling you straight off, it's not going to be easy."
"Is it better than being slaughtered here like cattle?"
Orman shouted.
"Oh, absolutely."
"Then tell us!
Speak up!"
"As you all know, I went on a bit of a recon. I needed to find out how close our enemies were. I saw the Horde and the United Armies, but that wasn't all."
"What else did you see?"
Laosh said in a fallen voice. I looked at him. "Shaman, we've both been wrong, you and I. This place will never become a new Chaldean home. If anything, it'll become our grave. But I know of a place where there are no Noctians. The warriors of neither light nor dark can reach it. And what's even better, there are no loony keeper ghosts there."
"Yes, please!"
someone shouted.
"Where is it?"
The crowd's thunderous laughter shattered Brookville halls. I peered at their severe faces. They were all ready to follow me to hell and back, if needs be. "I suggest we go and reclaim your old home. We're going back to Silver Mountain Valley." Chapter 24. I still smile, remembering the commotion that went up in the crowd when I'd said that. The cheers. As you might have guessed, the Chaldeans had promptly forgotten all about mass sacrifices, or psychopathic ghosts. Both the Keeper and even the very entrance to the Brookville Halls had immediately been consigned to oblivion. The camp dissolved into a flurry of packing up. We'd cleared the armory and loaded all its contents onto sledges. The brocks, the glaive throwers, and the trebuchet would have to be taken apart and packed into crates. We'd have to do that last thing before leaving. The death of the Noctian puppeteer had bought us some downtime. According to my calculations, we had less than 48 hours until the Horde arrived. Still, It gave us plenty of head start. We didn't even consider the smaller Noctian groups. They were no danger to us. They'd previously engaged us in battle a couple of times, but that was nothing compared to what we'd already suffered. It was such a good job we'd managed to kill both Shaggy and his Karuk. Had the Noctians had a half-decent leader now, we wouldn't have had it so easy. Droy had appointed a cavalry commander, Bevan the Raven, a sinewy, black-bearded guy, one of those who descended with us to the West Grotto to fight the King of Thorn Rats. Apparently, Bevan was one of the wolves' best. Droy must have set his sights on him there and then, so now he'd entrusted him with the command of 200 riders. Finally, my third scroll had come in handy. The V formation, remember? The one I'd received with my Commander General's rank? It allowed you to organize heavy riders in a, well, V formation. They would attack the enemy, followed by light riders, mainly archers, who would finish off those who'd survived the first wave. Also, the formation had bonuses to damage, strength, and speed. Later, we'd have a chance to see the V formation in action when a small Noctian group attacked our returning caravan. You can't forget that sight in a hurry, I tell you. Even the Chaldeans themselves couldn't believe their eyes. Now, as they were busy packing, I checked all the remaining nooks and crannies in the city in the hope of finding something worth my while. No such luck. The admins had run out of freebies. Still, I wasn't too upset. We had plenty of stuff as it was. The siege machines were a treasure in themselves. Now we had enough protection wherever we went. We left the city early in the morning. We broke camp properly and walked unhurriedly under the heavy escort of our riders and footmen. I'd activated all of my buffs, too. Just in case, you know. I had mixed feelings about leaving Twilight Castle. On one hand, it was a shame I hadn't completed the quest. Activating the obelisk might have given us loads of various bonuses. And whenever I looked back at the long path we'd traveled to get here, I almost kicked myself. But, on the other hand, whenever I looked at the unfinished wall and the clumsy lump of tree trunks and bits of steel we'd proudly called the city gates, and at the black ruins sticking out of the snow like rotten teeth, I felt a huge relief. I was tired of being a pawn in somebody else's game. At least now I was my own master. I took the caravan along the northern side of the mountain range that led all the way to Silver Mountain Valley. I called this route the Northern Way. True, it meant we had to make a dog's leg, but it was worth it. The Noctian horde was moving toward us along the range's southern side. None of us was really looking forward to meeting them. On the second day of our journey, I received a pompous system message telling me that the Noctians had taken Twilight Castle, therefore I'd failed my mission and had been stripped of my proud title of City Keeper. Immediately, the bunch of the keys to the city and the page of Arwin's notes disappeared from my bag. That was it. All the tales had been docked. Strangely enough, I kept all the trade route maps and city plans. Apparently, they weren't part of the quest. On the 10th day of our journey, I decided to take Boris and go have a quick look at the city. What I saw there left me speechless. The entire valley had been scorched. There were no Noctians left there anymore. Apparently, the clans of Light and Dark had already made quick work of them, and were now busy slaughtering each other. I couldn't have made a better decision. Nobody had activated the Twilight Obelisk. It looked like this place was going to attract greedy stares for a long time still. Good. I just hoped it stayed that way. The morning sun enveloped the valley and the surrounding cliffs in its warm, sparkling veil. Its touch melted the snow, which ran away in hundreds of little rivulets, hurrying away from home to see new, uncharted lands. The cliffs, fed up with the winter chill, offered their flanks to the warm sun rays. The spring walked across the valley, her soft, green footsteps awakening the frozen earth from its hibernation. "Silver Mountain Valley starts behind that forest over there," I told Droy, who was standing next to me. "We're almost there."
"Oh, yes,"
Droy replied, peering at the dark depths of the forest.
"The Rockwood. I've never seen it so close before, but I've heard so many legends and ballads about it."
I chuckled. "You and your ballads. If I listened to you, the Red Owls would sing them all day long." He grinned, then continued in a much more serious tone.
"I suggest we set up camp here. Everybody's tired. They need a break. 3 days of rest might do it. You could take Boris for a quick spin, just to check out the area."
I nodded. "Good idea." It had been 20 days since we'd left Enon City. I wouldn't say it had been a walk in the park. Quite the opposite, in fact. Still, our little exodus had proven very productive. Every now and again, our caravan had aggroed some very impressive mobs, all of them levels 400+. I was curious to see what kind of creatures inhabited the north of No Man's Lands. As soon as we arrived and began settling down in Silver Mountain Valley, I might take Boris on a recon mission to those parts of the world. Apart from fighting off mobs, we'd managed to loot 5 mini-instances. I'd made level 300 in the last one, a nice round number. I'd long overgrown my current gear. My bag was packed to the brim with loot. I also had new pages available in my book of blueprints. Now I could make a 30-strong colony of ants, and a spider which could spin cobweb traps. But to do all that, I needed more materials. The owls weren't too far behind. They were long ready to advance to the next development level. So I could use a break, really. It was high time I saw my old friend Rorgus. He was probably wondering what the hell had happened to me.
"To tell you the truth, I'm so happy it worked out the way it did,"
Rorgus said pensively after I'd finished telling him my story.
"I was very worried about your relationship with the Players' clans, both of the Light and the Dark. And now it looks like they have more important things to worry about."
"You could say that. I sent you the footage. You'll see what they've turned the valley into. It's like a nuclear bomb site."
"Talking about which,"
he perked up,
"you know that your videos are trending, don't you? That girl's channel has made it to the top 100.
"I've just sent her more of them. Lots of interesting stuff there. You're gonna love them."
"I'm sure I will. She must be very happy."
I shrugged. I don't know who will be happier, her or myself. Rorgus's green, dwandish mug grew long with amazement.
Why?
When I came back and checked my inbox, I saw a few letters from her, as well as some money transfer reports. Apparently, she kept sending me my cut for the viewings. Rorgus scratched the back of his head.
I must be getting old. Do they get paid for posting stuff?
Apparently. Talking about which, I have something to send you, too. I forwarded him his share of the gold I'd farmed in both the grotto and the city treasury. He just stared at me, open-mouthed.
Where did you get this from?
Just looted the city a bit. Was I a keeper or just a pretty face?
That's the way to do it!
He rubbed his hands, then added, raising a meaningful finger,
Loot is an important factor in our emotional security.
Don't give me that shrink stuff, I said.
Come on, don't drag it out. Where is it?
It's right here, man. As I produced last month's pickings out of the bag, I thought he might need emergency resuscitation. All the bones, fangs, animal pelts, weapons, armor, crystals, materials, stones, and elixirs. I had no idea my bag could fit so much. And finally, this, I said triumphantly, producing a small pile of steel pieces. They clattered onto the table with a dull glint.
Is this what I think it is?
Rorgus wheezed, near unconscious. I really should have been more careful. I only had one best friend. It is, I nodded. Field altar fragments. 4 red ones and 5 purple ones. 1 purple one is ready to be assembled. In actual fact, it was the Karuk that had dropped 1 of the red fragments. All the rest we'd farmed in the mini-instances on our way back to Silver Mountain Valley.
You have any idea how much it costs?
Rorgus whispered, his shaking hands fumbling with the pieces. And this is only the beginning, I told him.
So, while the players are busy at each other's throats trying to claim Enon City, you moved on. And what are you planning to do there?
Oh, whatever. A new settlement. A city. A country, maybe? Chapter 25. Spring was on a roll. The sun shared its heat generously with even the darkest corners of rock wood. The birds exchanged the latest news in cascades of happy twittering. The first buds covered tree branches, promising to soon unfold into gentle green leaves. Whoever had named this location must have been out of his mind. I'd never seen so much vegetation anywhere in Mirror World. We'd been crossing Rock Wood for 4 days already. Unlike the icy woods with their dead trees, this one was perfectly normal, albeit wild and untrodden, overgrown with chaotic clusters of conifers and deciduous species. It differed so much from the organized, cultivated forests of the real world, with their disciplined ranks of carefully chosen trees. Our advance was slow, but not because we were tired. The Chaldeans had rested really well during our 3-day stop. They'd slept a lot, eaten their fill, and were in great shape. The reason for our slow advance was Shorv and his men's constant forays out to investigate the way. Thanks to them, we'd already successfully avoided an encounter with a small but very predatory group of giant level 500 pangolins. We'd been forced to go off route for a while just to make sure we didn't run into their buddies. The fat treetops had rendered me completely useless as a scout, which was why Shorv's men's skills were greatly appreciated. Naturally, we could handle these kinds of mobs these days, but not without casualties. Every time we stopped, we started by making lots of fires and posting sentries next to them. Kaltean's strength and stamina never ceased to amaze me. No one complained. There was no belly aching or protesting, no matter how hard the going had gotten. The Kalteans obeyed their commander's orders indiscriminately, without arguing over them. They remained calm, even though the trek through the woods wasn't the easiest. Most likely, they managed to grab a bit of rest during the recon stops. That, and also my buffs, which I kept activating non-stop. Our champions were especially courageous and disciplined. Their very presence seemed to improve the others' morale. They tried to be everywhere at once, supporting their clanmates. I, too, tried to follow their example, which was why I'd offered to stand the night watch. I'd spent half the night sitting by the fire waiting for Bad War and Lavina to relieve me. Still shivering from their sleep, they moved closer to the flames. Even though this place was much further south of Ennin City, this wasn't the real south. No palm trees and sun-kissed beaches here. I stayed by the fire for a while, just to make sure the other two had woken up properly, then made myself a bed nearby. I closed my eyes and began thinking about all the recent changes in my life. About my wife and my daughter, and everything that had happened lately. Gradually, sleep enveloped my mind, adding a touch of fantasy to my thoughts. Over the last few weeks, I'd learned to balance between sleep and wakefulness without succumbing fully to my slumber. This is probably how wild beasts rest, ever watchful. Also, a weird, uneasy sensation didn't let me sleep properly. This was what my grandfather used to describe as a gut feeling. Still, gradually, the night had taken its rightful toll, suppressing the weak impulse of anxiety. I just needed some peace and quiet. I sat up and rubbed my eyes.
"Who are you?"
I didn't expect to see this at all. A small, alven girl sat by the fire, her blonde hair and light clothing a stark contrast to Bad War and Lavina's heavy gear. They were only at arm's length away, and still they completely ignored her. The two exchanged short phrases, keeping a watchful eye on the night forest. The system refused to identify her. The girl didn't seem to have a name or a level. She sat by the fire sideways, hugging her knees, her slanted blue eyes watching the flames. The fire cast an uneven light on her ponytail and freckled face. The impossibility of it threw me. How did she get here? Why did no one seem to see her?
"I'm surprised you've noticed me, mortal."
I jumped at the sound of her soft, calm voice. She didn't take her eyes away from the flames. She didn't move. She hadn't even turned her head. Bad War and Lavina continued to exchange whispers. They couldn't hear her, damn it! She paused, waiting for me to say something, then went on.
I haven't seen sentient beings in this forest for centuries. And now you. So many.
For a brief moment, her smile seemed predatory. Then, the calm, impassive expression returned to her pale face.
Do you like our forest?
I just nodded. Our? Did that mean she wasn't alone here? Then again, why should she be?
Please, stay. We'll be happy to have you.
The same predatory smile again. I dared not breathe, too scared to attract her attention. And she just sat there, hugging her knees and staring at the fire.
We have so much space here. You'll like it.
Strange she didn't move. Normally, people are obliged to change their position from time to time. They can't just sit motionless like that. Only her lips seem to be moving. I heard a fresh branch crackling in the fire. Pine treetops rustled overhead. I desperately wanted to wake up, but it didn't look as if I was sleeping. This seemed to be for real. The fire, the night, the strange visitor, the unsuspecting Chaldeans apparently unable to see her. Talking about which, the sentries would have to be relieved soon. As if sensing my thoughts, she finally looked up at me. Her slanted, pale blue eyes focused, unblinking, as if reaching into the very depths of my soul. I tried to avert my own gaze, but couldn't. Was she trying to hypnotize me of something? What were the admins playing at? Her voice had changed imperceptibly. Now it sounded hard and insistent.
I've changed my mind, you know. No, you're not gonna like it here.
Her mouth curved in an unnatural, bloodthirsty grin. The rest of her face remained frozen, devoid of any emotion. Still unable to move, I noticed four small fangs showing behind her pale, bloodless lips. Something was going very wrong here. Spine-chillingly so.
You know what I think,
she continued.
You might die very soon. Still, you have a choice. Leave these mortals. Fly away. They're a nuisance.
I was completely paralyzed, unable to move a limb. My breathing slowed right down. Every breath became a struggle. I was suffocating. My mouth went dry. I was thirsty as hell. Panic gripped my mind, immobilizing my arms, legs, my shoulders. My chest heaved. My oxygen-deprived lungs were on fire. What was going on here? What kinds of special effects were these? The further into no man's lands, the more hardcore it became. Now my every heartbeat added anger to the chilling panic. A hot, furious rage. And the more I fumed, the weaker my invisible fetters grew. Was the effect wearing off? Was it some kind of warning from the admins? My suffocating began to ease up. The creature's stone face shifted into a mask of surprise. Her right eyebrow rose slightly. Her mouth curved in disdain, baring two of the fangs.
"You seem to be stronger than I thought you were, human."
This voice was different. The apparition began to fade. I'd been right then. This had only been a temporary visual effect. What a relief. I'd very nearly freaked out. My blood was still boiling with adrenaline. A weird little creature was now sitting where the Alvin girl had just been. The size of a 10-year-old child, it had weak, emaciated limbs covered in hard, gray skin. It sat in an ungainly pose with its knock-kneed hind legs tucked under it. The creature's head was small and wrinkled all over, like a shrunken potato. Its teeth were small and sharp, with pronounced fangs. Patches of short, mousy hair covered some parts of its body. The firelight reflected in the creature's enormous, pitch-black eyes, which stared at me unblinkingly like two saucers. I was feeling slightly better now. Still, the moment I tried to move and take a deep breath, the invisible weight pressed me down again, binding my body with the same spine-chilling stupor. Bastard admins! Them and their experiments! After a few more unsuccessful attempts to wrestle myself free, I tried to relax and calm down.
"That's better,"
the creature croaked. It sounded as if it coughed out every word.
"I know you can understand what I'm saying. I've been keeping an eye on you for quite a while, human."
"What do you want?" The fact that my idle immobility was nothing good was pretty self-explanatory. On the plus side, the numbness seemed to subside. I needed to bide for time. This was probably the best tactic for this sick scenario. The creature didn't seem to have heard my question. Its wrinkled body stretched out, as if awaking from a slumber. Dark, webbed wings opened up behind its back, ending in sharp bone spikes. The wings were three times wider than its body, making it look a bit like an oversized bat. The first flying NPC, LOL. New competition for my Boris.
"Do you remember the farm behind the stockade? I can see you do. I saw you tame that hugger. Well done. When I told my sisters about you, they didn't believe me. They laughed at me."
Mechanically, I looked around, expecting to see more adversaries. I dreaded to even think what the sisters of this abomination could be capable of. I still remembered the dead farm, the caked blood, the ashes, and now the camp full of sleeping Chaldeans. So it had been her then. The creature croaked, laughing.
"Don't worry, human. My sisters didn't believe me. Which is a shame. Now I'll have all of your strength. I'm so hungry. I'm so happy I've arrived here first. Before my sisters."
"How about a deal?" I offered, bidding for time. I could move freely now. But I continued to fake numbness, wheezing and gasping as if from lack of air. there was one thing I couldn't understand. There I was, shooting the breeze with a monster from hell, and my Chaldeans were dead to the world.
You're stupid. All humans are. Can a spider make a deal with a fly?
Well, that's a matter of opinion. My summoning amulets were ready. The fix box was fully charged. Thanks to my new purple gear that Rorgus had procured for me, I wasn't so nice and cuddly anymore. He'd actually promised to arrange a closed auction for me for the set I'd won back in the Isles. According to him, players were fighting over items like those. I was ready to attack. Still, I needed Chaldeans to back me up. Even though I'd received no system messages, I'd have been stupid not to see that this was one hell of a powerful mob.
I'm tired of you. You've made me hungry.
That was the signal for me to attack. I lunged at the creature like greased lightning. I'd never moved so fast in my life. I gave it my all. My little fleas also leapt onto her like silver darts, aiming for her shriveled chest. Her agonizing squeal made the blood freeze in my veins. 20 high-level fleas can do this to you. Screeching and wheezing, the creature spread her enormous wings and darted up into the air, trying to brush the fleas off with her scrawny little paws. In her agony, she'd forgotten about her surroundings and revealed herself to everyone in the camp. You need to give my friends their due. They quickly put two and two together and jumped to their feet, ready to fight. Lavina rolled away from the fire and was already loosing off arrows into the sky. Badwar rushed toward me, trying to cover me with his shield. The remaining three Chaldean scouts hurried to string their bows, about to join Lavina. Now we were going to show her. In the meantime, something had happened to the creature. Her body began to grow. Just a moment ago, her shriveled chest had been trembling, pierced by several arrows. And now it was expanding, growing strong before our very eyes. The weak knots of muscles covering her puny limbs expanded, turning into Herculean steel cables. Her clawed fingers extended. Her little fangs had grown big and strong. Her powerful wingbeats raised dust into the air. A mixture of dry leaves, twigs, and still-burning embers enveloped us. The monster wasn't squealing any longer. The night woods shuddered with her powerful roar. The thing's huge black eyes searched for her attackers in the midst of the humans fussing about below. My fleas died, one after the other, leaving scary-looking, venomous wounds in the monster's body. The first one of Lavina's glowing arrows pierced the creature's shoulder, extracting another ear-shattering roar from its throat. More arrows assaulted it, as if on cue, piercing its legs and ribs and puncturing its wings. In a desperate wingbeat, the beast managed to dodge the last arrow. I did my best to keep up with the archers. My slingshot kept firing non-stop. Not that it was much good, but still. Rorgus had promised me to talk to some craftsman who apparently could improve my fabled minor pocket weapon. The guy was a master blacksmith who did a bit of DIY on the side, making sure it didn't come to his clan's attention. I'd have to wait for that. Same applied to my red belt buckle. I needed a master leather worker to make an actual belt for it, and that wasn't going to be easy. Finally, the monster killed the last flea. There was no point making more, because the creature was too high in the air anyway. It moved fast amid the trees. Unless it got out into the open, my Boris was no match for it. No point summoning him, or Frankie either. Both were almost the same level as myself now. The last time I'd gone to the continent, I'd paid another visit to Master Rotim, who'd leveled their old skills up a bit, and opened a couple of new ones. It wasn't getting any cheaper. Still, now Boris boasted a furious peck, while Frankie could cast a speed buff on me. Wailing like a banshee, the monster took to the sky until it reached a certain height. It closed its wings and began dropping down, spreading its talons in front of it like a hawk going for its prey. Oh, bummer. It was aiming for me. I must have pulled all the aggro to myself. Still, that also meant it was going to land. I stopped and raised my head to the skies. Come to Daddy, little birdie. I have a surprise for you. Get ready! It's coming down! I shouted to the warriors. My temples were splitting with the strain. Still, it wasn't the right moment to worry about myself. I stood motionless, with my legs spread wide, clenching the little mirror in my right hand. Come on now! It kept dropping toward me like a giant rock, apparently savoring the moment of sweet revenge. Badwar the Thunder Warrior roared something to his men. Now that I'd seen his battle axe in action, I knew why he was called so. Lavina was snapping commands to the archers. Now the fun would begin. Finally, the monster's giant black shadow covered me. I leapt aside. You've activated the magic mirror of Ishood. My exact copy was now standing where I'd just stood. I didn't have the time to enjoy the likeness. The beast went right through it, hitting the ground nice and hard. Warning! Your reflection has been destroyed. You can use the mirror again in 1:59. The monster's attack had been crushing. Literally. Had I stood there, I'd have been back at my respawn point already. The creature raised clouds of wet topsoil as it searched blindly around, digging through the heaps of pine needles and rotting leaves, looking for me. Its disappointed wail echoed over the camp. Just what we needed. Boris! Chant! Scorpy! Your turn! Boris appeared out of nowhere with an ear-shattering scream. Oh, wow. He was good, wasn't he? The monster froze in place like a pillar of salt, staring meaninglessly into space. The scorpion sank his pincers into the creature's webbed wings, pulling aggro to himself and immobilizing it even more. His long steel tail began punching the mob's gray skin with its sharp, venomous tip. Fire! I shouted to the archers, releasing another swarm of fleas. With a furious growl, Badwar lunged at the monster and brought his battle axe down onto its head. Again and again, until we heard his weapon's signature sound, which resembled a thunderclap. The creature finally awoke from its stupor and snapped at the scorpion's steel pincers. Its claws sliced through the shiny armor on his back. Some damage that was. Hold on, Steely Guts. I'm coming. Badwar was getting tired. He'd barely dodged a blow from the creature's powerful, spiky wing. One of the monster's claws brushed against his back. Had it not been for his armor, he'd have now been lying on the ground with a broken spine. The fleas clung onto the creature's body, busy sucking its blood. The scorpion replied to its every blow with several lightning-fast stings. Arrows showered the monster non-stop. The battle axe wounds on its body looked awful. The flea and scorpion toxins slowly corroded the creature from the inside. It was growing weak. Its body resembled a lump of bloodied meat. We were nearly there. Victory was close at hand. What's with the absence of system messages? Why couldn't I see the mob's stats? Not a single damage report. Was it some error? A glitch? A bug? One of Lavina's blue arrows put an end to the battle, sinking deep into the creature's head. The monster choked on its own roaring, emitting a shrill, ear-shattering scream. It began to shrink before our very eyes. Its scream of agony stopped mid-note. It collapsed to the ground. Silence hung over the camp. "Congratulations! You've killed a Vapri, level 500, one of the five Icy Duries. Reward, the Icy Heart of Vapri, 1. Kill all 5 Duries and collect 5 hearts to receive a Duri skill of your choice. Congratulations! You've received a legendary achievement, Epic Monster Slayer. You're a legend! Reward, the Order of Victorious Gaze. For your information, as the holder of the legendary Order of Victorious Gaze, you bring plus 30% to observation skills of all group members. We were sitting around a freshly started fire. The camp looked like military training grounds after a good shootout. Clumps of wet soil covered everything around. A rotting mixture of old moss, pine needles, blackened leaves, and dank twigs. I looked around me, taking in our camp state. The sun had long risen, but wasn't in a hurry to show from behind the gloomy gray clouds. The air was damp and fresh. We'd already packed our stuff. The Chaldean seemed to have finally recovered from the horror of the previous night's battle. Or at least, they'd stopped ambling pointlessly around the camp, looking lost. My pets had long forgotten their ordeal, and were now playing chase with abandon. Looking at them, I couldn't help feeling as if this was but a leisurely walk in the park. Badwar had removed his armor and sat by the fire, his torso bandaged with wide strips of fabric. The monster had grazed him after all, giving him a purple back injury. I could see his life dwindle, then promptly restore again, thanks to my order. Badwar's pained breathing didn't prevent him from wolfing down the thick stew sitting in front of him. Lavina and the archers got away unscathed. I was shaken, but unhurt. My temples tingled a bit, that was all. As soon as I got out of the capsule, I'd have to discuss all these weird special effects with the staff. Were they trying to experiment on the players or something? I'd managed to grab a bit of sleep after the battle, but not much. 2 hours at most. Now, I just sat there, taking in the results of last night's party. Lavina was sitting next to me, cool as a cucumber, wrapped in animal skins. This was one tough lady. She'd fought with the best of them, and basically decided the outcome of the battle.